empty expanse. Wow, I barely did anything and I'm already getting applause. This is, I love this.
Oh, now there's a airplane.
Is that what that is? Max Musicant, in his Friendly Fronts toolkit, says, empty expanses of grass and unadorned stretches of concrete make us uncomfortable, so we hurry past. The discomfort is instinctive, deeply rooted, and pervasive. When we start to look around us, we can see countless spaces that are underused with social and economic benefits needlessly, thoughtlessly forfeited. Hi, this is Greg Meyer.
And I'm Melissa Locke.
And I'm Chris Tripolino. And we're coming to you from our office courtyard today, so you might hear some different noises. And at the same time, we get the pleasure of welcoming our friend Sarah Joy Prope with the Proximity Project. Welcome this morning.
Thank you. It's good to be here and to enjoy the ambient noises happening here in the public space of your courtyard.
Yeah. So speaking of public space, what Max Musicant is getting at there is that we have all given into a very compromised physical built environment around us, and that's having some effect on us. And I know this is something that you work on full time. So what's your take on that?
You know, I think it's really true. And unfortunately, because we are like fish swimming in water, we're so often unaware that our physical environment is having huge implications on how we do life together as community members, how we interact with our neighbors. And we're really starting to see the effects of that just through the deterioration and the polarization that we see happening so many places in our culture right now. And so I think one of the best ways that we can curb some of that is to re-engage these public spaces, to really think through how do we create these oases of delight, these spaces that really invite people to know one another and to engage with one another in more real relational ways, right?
So how is this happening? If we really are living in an environment, a built environment around us that is not feeding us and in fact is maybe detracting from our humanity and our potential experience with the world and with one another, like how does that actually play out? Like what's going on?
You know, I think for us, it's a human nature thing, right? We sense when places don't feel good, but because we've lived in such an auto-centric culture too, more recently, is that we don't engage those spaces. We don't even realize that we're crossing through hundreds of spaces that don't feel good because we're in our cars, so we're separate from those spaces. But then when you get out on the street and you walk and you're in those places, all of a sudden you're starting to realize, oh, this doesn't feel good, but you don't have a framework for really understanding why doesn't this space feel good. And so that's part of, you know, the joy of what I get to do is I help give people a framework for understanding what does it mean to engage human-scaled spaces to understand what we were created and designed for. And I think we see that so much when you go to places like Savannah, Georgia, or Charleston, or the San Antonio Riverwalk, places that have these human-scale components that you can get out and walk and you can really engage in the environment. People love those places, and they flock to them, right? And so obviously, it's something that we're designed for, we're created for, we love that sort of thing, but why is it that we're not doing it well in our cities?
So I would actually argue, though, that because we have been fish swimming in water and are so unaware of what water is, that even when we do stop and walk, we still don't notice. It's having that erosive or corrosive effect on us, but I only expect pavement and gutters and streets and having my walk constantly interrupted by traffic. I just think that's what it is to be a person. And maybe that's not horrible, but the vision of having like, no, you know, like the city could really be built for us as people and also allow cars. So what would that mean for us? Or how do we start realizing that we are in water? You know, realizing
right.
that we could expect something different.
A couple of things. I mean, I think simply start walking and actually pay attention, right?
Earbuds.
Don't necessarily just put your earbuds in and zone out. Take the time to really listen to what's happening around you. Pay attention to where you're engaging with cars on the street, what feels comfortable, what doesn't, where there's maybe dangerous intersections or places where you feel like you're darting across the street to avoid getting hit by a car. Places like that, put them on your radar and start thinking strategically about what can we as a community do to address some of these areas, because likely you're not the only one feeling that in those places. And so how do you start talking about it? How do you start putting it on the radar and have people engage in the conversations to advocate for change? There's a lot of ways to do that at your city level and at your neighborhood level. So start thinking through some of those solutions.
And Sarah Joy, you have helped me personally kind of think about my yard space, you know, my own space, and you continue to inspire our household to be thinking about how to do that. And one of the things that I've really appreciated is the ideas that are sort of simple, are low cost, and just require our sort of tweaking of how we're seeing the space. And I think that is a huge part of this conversation too, just how we can take the spaces that we actually control and make some simple adjustments to kind of regain some of that that delight that we have maybe lost or just didn't know that we could have.
Definitely. And I think that comes back to the Friendly Fronts toolkit of what are the creative things that you can do with the space that you have. And, you know, putting in seating is kind of number one thing, right? It's super simple. And then actually sit in it. That's an important component. Make yourself available. Be out there. Engage with it yourself. But also, I think about growing up, we put a swing in our front yard. I don't think my parents necessarily advocated for it, but I went and put it up anyway.
You were doing it even then.
And it was so funny because we would look out there all of a sudden, like a week or two later, and there would be neighborhood kids that we had no idea who they were or where they had come from, and they were out swinging away on our swing. So, you know, thinking of ways that you can engage the neighborhood children, I think, is a really fun element, too. So writable, I mean, I've seen so many people do writable chalkboards and different things like that, ways to, again, just have people stop in the space and enjoy it, and opens up space for you to have then relationship and communication and getting to know your neighbors. So I think starting there, is so important because that is what you can do, and you can see the effects shorter term, right? And I think what's so important is as you develop these spaces within your own front yard, do it with the longer view in mind. Because I always say, you know, the short term can't be divorced from the long term, because if you do that, you lose sight of why you're doing this on the bigger scale, right? So start small, but look towards the bigger scale too. And you may not always see the long term effects down the road, but do it anyway, because that's what we're called to do, right? We're called to live with this greater vision of redemption, of things being made whole and communities being restored, right?
Another small thing that you have helped me think about more, and Greg talks about it with, like, the word interruption you've been saying lately, just in our routine. So without even changing what's in your front yard, you can change where you park.
Exactly.
Don't use the garage, or, you know, park a little further away and walk. Don't use your car when you don't need to use your car.
Right. I mean,
that's so, so many assumptions that we just get used to that we don't have to stick with when you start thinking about it more.
Right, definitely.
But I like what you're saying, you know, Sarah Joy. Some of those ideas that come from the Friendly Fronts toolkit is like putting up the chalkboard, or having sidewalk chalk out, or having those living spaces, or having signs on your plants that are beautiful that tell people what they are.
Right.
It's like what they're saying is that I expect you to be here.
Yeah.
Which is a different message. So the person who is unaware that things, I'm just passing by houses on my way to something else, it says, no, I'm expected to be at these places in between. So I'm not just passing through, I'm actually here. And the people in this house expect me to be here, and I'm not an interruption. In fact, they are the interruption for me to help me be present.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
I just think changing, I mean, those are such subtle shifts that reorient the direction of how we are engaging our spaces around us. One says, you know, get through it and, you know, don't worry about it. And the other one says, no, absorb this. This is part of being who we are together.
Right. I think we've given up a lot for convenience, for the sake of convenience. And we haven't thought a lot about what we've lost on the flip side of that. And so while we may have gained efficiency and convenience
and comfort, maybe too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think we've lost then potential for relationships in many places. And then we think we've accommodated that with something like Facebook, but I guarantee you that you feel less fulfilled scrolling down through your Facebook feed than you do having a conversation with somebody on the sidewalk. but this desire for convenience and comfort and efficiency has so many implications across the board.
Even the simple act of needing, we don't need to ask for directions anymore.
Right, yep,
and
that's another
thing. Sometimes I purposely ask for directions when I know I can look it up.
Yeah, right.
But there's somebody right there that looks like they've been around. And why would I not ask them?
I love it. I always get so excited when I'm out walking around and I get stopped to ask for directions, or somebody stops me and asks for directions. I feel so excited about
it. Makes your day, right?
I'll tell them even if I don't know. I'll just make something up. It just feels so good.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, and have you tried that bagel shop down the street?
And I mean, and it allows for you to have that, again, conversation and, like, sharing with each other, like, what the good places are. And,
Yeah.
So this conversation sparks curiosity in me about what it is that we actually value, you know, those things that are underneath these decisions that we make, because it's not just aesthetic, it's not just preference or, you know, feeling good that drives a lot of these conversations. I hear us talking about connection and community, and, you know, there are threads of justice that come into play here, too.
I mean, we have a long ways to go for some people, and it's not the niceties of life. It's really basics for a lot of people. We can do better. Like in relationships, I really believe that you're either improving your relationship, either building it up, or it's falling apart. There's no status quo. You know, status quo just means that you're allowing it to slowly erode. And I think it's the same thing with our impact. Are we helping one another be neighbors? Are we interacting with the world in ways that help us understand who we are and build us up? Or are you not doing that? And, you know, the hard part of this that I would say is that you're on one side or the other. You're either building up or you're helping or letting it fall apart.
Thanks.
Yeah, right. Which sounds really brutal. I think it's true. But the neat thing about it is the difference between those is so small. Like if you find, well, I'm really not building up relationships and not building up my neighborhood. I'm part of like this growing isolation trend, stuff like that. The things that you would do to change that are so small.
Like it's not, asking for directions.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. Or just putting a chair out and reading the newspaper, having my cup of coffee there, or you're going for this little walk. I mean, it's just those little moves. It's like, oh, I'm a bad person. I have to change everything. No. It's just a little subtle shifts that move the needle going the other direction. And we can all do that, and you don't have to feel all bad about yourself or anything like that. We are unaware.
So I like this idea of the long view that you talk about, Sarah Joy, the horizon.
Yeah, and it means, you know, being there in the tough spaces. It's not always going to be easy. The road is not one that's necessarily quick. So what does it mean then to be in those hard spaces and to continue to fight in that battle to promote justice and the welfare of those around us. But I do believe that is what we are called to do, and I believe that it is a more fulfilling pursuit than most other things in life.
And seeing the passion and the excitement and the energy you bring to this issue, like, makes me convinced that is a better way. Like, I want to be about that too. So thank you for being with us and inspiring us and helping us find some direction forward in all this, Sarah Joy.
Definitely. Yeah. Thank you. It's been great to be here.
Thanks.
And thanks for listening. We'll catch up with you next time.